Golf Smarter number 156 for December 9, 2008.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Swing smarter, better, and more powerfully with Sean Clement.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. I'm currently on vacation. How's my tan? I'm in Aruba and hopefully am spending the day at Tierra del Sol, the only golf course on the island. And if all goes well, we'll soon have an episode featuring their head professional, Oliver Riding. Today's guest has some great instruction on YouTube, in addition to publishing articles in many golf magazines. We'll also have one of Sean's videos on how to leverage power on the Golf Smarter blog. From the swing to the short game, Sean's website and instruction covers the gamut, and we have him here today. Welcome to Golf Smarter, Sean.
Thanks very much, Fred. Glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. You've got a fabulous website. Congratulations. Not only do you have lots of great articles that you've written for various magazines, but you really have some wonderful stuff on YouTube, and we encourage everybody to check out SeanClementGolf.com and follow the leads to his YouTube videos, because you're going to get a lot out of those.
Thank you very much, Fred. Yeah, just go to the YouTube Sean page there on the website, then. There's over 130 videos right there, you know, between 2 and 10 minutes long to help you out with your golf game.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, maybe we'll find a way to put those on our website, too. We'll share them with our audience. We'll definitely, it'll be on our blog, the Golf Smarter blog. We'll put one of those videos associated when we publish the show.
Fantastic.
That would be great. But let's talk about, I really want to ask you about Mo Norman. I've heard the legendary Mo Norman. I don't know if everybody in our audience has. I don't know enough about Mo Norman. You worked with him, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, myself and two other professional friends of mine from Canada, we really, when his first video came out, well, one of the videos that came out was called Pipeline Mo Norman. And as soon as we saw that video, he was with Dr. Jim Suddy, which we all know, and he was over at Pine Needles doing a demonstration there in a clinic. And you watch him swing, and you listen to him, and it was so completely different than what we've seen before. And, you know, one of my jobs, my winter job at the time, was on the professional ski patrol. So, you know, I had to really study the human bone structure and, the human muscular system, because, you know, you treat these people on the hill, and then you got to get them ready to get treated at the hospital. So you got to know your stuff. And knowing how the human body worked really helped me out. And we looked at the human body, and we looked at Mo Norman, and so many things that he did in his swing worked in unison with how the human body worked. And we really broke his swing down for about 7 years. And we studied his swing inside and out, and the guy is just phenomenal.
Did he know that?
Yeah, actually.
I mean, here's someone who could just naturally, he's got it figured out in his head, but...
Yeah.
Was he able to synthesize this and understand the fact that he is really taking a different approach?
Yeah, absolutely. We've met him several times. I had the privilege of playing golf with him a couple of times.
Wow.
and saw numerous of his clinics, and we actually we had him do a clinic for us down in Port St. Lucie. We were opening up a training center for some golf professionals, mm-hmm. and we had Mo Norman come in. We had about 500 people that day in the grandstands, and we had his book and his video, and he was able to autograph a few of those for the people that were there. And I was privileged to be able to sit down with Mo one-on-one, which is really rare, and had some very normal conversations with him. You know, the guy is really normal once you get to know him, but. He puts on quite a facade to protect himself, or he used to anyway.
And so give us a little more background about who he was and what he did to earn the reputation that he has.
Shoots some very low scores, number one. Lots of course records, yeah. and just bar none. I mean, you listen to the guys who've ever watched him. You know, Nick Faldo watched him for 3 hours when he came up here at the Canadian Open, you know, and Lee Trevino was just used to marvel at him, and he actually played the PGA Tour for a while. He was kind of chased off the tour because of his antics and the way he dressed, and, you know, it was very important for the tour's image at the time to be, you know, well-dressed and properly attired and make sure that you spoke the language, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people didn't take too kindly with the way, you know, he was off the golf course. And
he was just an outrageous, bigger-than-life character?
Well, no. I mean, yeah, on the golf course, he had the reputation of, you know, teeing off on Coke bottles and on super long tees. And he loved to entertain the crowd because he could. I mean, nobody could hit the ball like him. Mm. And if anybody out there has ever been to one of his clinics, they understand exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, he hits golf balls with a 7-iron, and he flushes those 7-irons out there beautiful, and then he goes to the 4-iron. Then he goes to the 4-wood, and by then, you know, he's got that beautiful little divot surface, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he starts rolling the ball into the middle of the divot and starts peeling drivers out of that divot.
Get out.
You know, 260, 270, just
no.
Bullets, one after the other, out of the divot.
And these are old. These are the old drivers. These aren't
absolutely. He had a Yonex graphite driver that he had filed down to 5 degrees of loft. And he was peeling those drivers out of that divot. It's just the craziest thing
you've
ever seen.
And putting it with 5 degrees, he was getting it in the air?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He could do anything with that golf ball. It was just phenomenal.
Well,
so,
you know, there's so many times where you'll see a phenomenal athlete or a phenomenal player of any sport.
Yeah.
Or even a prodigy in music who cannot translate that into instruction. They don't have the compassion to understand why people struggle because it's so easy for them.
Right.
Was he able to do that?
Later on. It took him a long time to really figure that out because, yeah, things did come extremely easy for him after a while. He said he had his swing trapped by the age of 19. And from the age of 19 on, there was no over par for Mo Norman. It was always under par.
Hmm.
A couple of buddies of mine, when I was playing the Canadian Tour, and, you know, we heard a lot of stories of Mo when we were out there, and one of my buddies from Arizona played a round of golf with Mo. He said he played the best he played that day. He shot a 69 on a tough course to Mo's 64. He said it was the easiest golf round he's ever witnessed. You know, it was just a pleasure to watch.
Wow.
And the things that I was able to talk to Mo about, we talked about the leverage.
Yeah, please.
You know, and you see that, like, in some of my YouTube videos, there's one entitled Leverage Power. And that's one of the conversations I had with Mo, with the way that he was able to use his right leg, because he kept his right foot on the ground way through impact, the way you see Kenny Perry and Scott Verplank do it. You know, their right foot stays right on the ground, well past impact, well into their finish position. And for Kenny Perry, it's an essential way for him to keep his head behind the ball. He stays really centered behind the ball because of that. That's one of the things that he does to do that. And that translates very much to Mo's, you know, we talk about that leverage through the golf ball. And he had this incredible brace against that left side as well. And it's just the sequencing of his swing was phenomenal. You know, he was so well braced on that left side well before his arms were coming down. It's like some of the conversations you hear a lot of the pros talk about Hogan starting down with the lower body before the upper body finished the backswing. Well, Mo definitely had that in his swing. I had done swing analysis between Mo Norman and Ben Hogan on the Golf Channel when I was on Golf Academy Live in 2001. And I did down-the-line view, Hogan with a 3-wood and Mo with a 4-wood, and they looked almost identical. Hmm. And everybody on the Golf Channel was freaking out. They said, what, Ben Hogan's a natural golfer? I said, no. You know, it's just the way they move in that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty funny. It was a great comparison, and Mo and Ben have a lot in common. They're both left hand dominant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're both backhanders in their game. So I learned a lot from Mo.
And if you could share one aha moment that you had with him while you were talking, you were playing,
uh-huh.
And you're just like, you're kidding.
that's it. We talked at length about balance, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was discussing with Mo that the way I was teaching, you know, I taught the golf swing from the ground up. And, you know, and yeah, he says, yeah, that's correct. You want to feel it from the feet. I feel the swing in my feet. But there's also the other way of looking at it. My swing balances me.
Mm-hmm.
And that statement just hit me like a ton of bricks. My swing balances me.
Let's take that and dissect it for a couple minutes.
Right.
Please.
So if, let's say, you're a person who takes the club way too far to the inside. So if you over, you know, Mo used to reach a lot for the ball, but he reached beyond the golf ball. Through impact, he was always in balance. And if you're a kind of person who takes the club too far to the inside, and if you take the club too far to the inside, you'll end up throwing a lot of weight back onto the heels, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then now you've got to lift the club up over yourself, and there's where when you react from that out-of-balance condition, you'll throw the club across the line at the top and then have to come back across the ball,
right.
Hence the over-the-top.
Over-the-top.
Okay, so if you take the club too far to the outside on the backswing, you rake yourself on the toes, and now you got to react in the other way. Right, so then on the way down, you're coming back too much from the inside. You lose your posture. You lose your spine angle. The butt sinks in, and you could shank a few, and you could push a few to the right. So the way Mo took it back, he always took it back in a way that allowed him to stay on his feet.
Mm.
And his downswing, his arms would come down on a plane that would allow him to stay on his feet. Hence, my swing balances me.
Fabulous.
So that, you know, that opened my eyes to another way of looking at things.
Sure.
And, you know, I always remember that statement because it taught me to really be open to what other people say and to make sure I digest it properly before I put it into action or I discard it.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're doing these days. You're based up in Toronto?
Yeah, we've got a wonderful little facility up here. We have the atmosphere of the range is terrific. We only have 21 mats, but it's extremely busy. We're about 20 minutes north of downtown Toronto in Richmond Hill.
But are you indoors?
I have an indoor and outdoor facility. You know,
oh, fabulous.
We've got the garage doors and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's 12 months a year.
We're 12 months a year, and just, you know, it's just a ton of people in the area, and we service them as best we can. I've got a team of seven teachers in the summer and two and a half in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And we just do a ton of lessons out of here.
What is the most common mistake that you see from golfers that are coming through these days?
They try to hit the golf ball.
I'm just going to not even respond to that.
You understand what I'm talking about?
No. Where do you want to go with that?
Okay, well, you see, and that's where, like, the I'm working on a DVD right now where it's going to be a training session, very much like Paul Berthely. Mo Norman used to talk very highly of Paul Berthely as a teacher, and the way you would learn when you go to the guy's house, and he would give you a dowel, not even a golf club, and you would swing with this dowel and learn how to swing that properly. And then he would introduce the golf ball. Mm. Only once you'd achieved a certain level with that dowel. So the thing is, as a beginner, you're given a club. Then you learn real quick, you know, how to hold the club, and then the ball is introduced immediately. You don't even have a golf swing yet, and you're taught to hit a golf ball. Well, that's the problem. See, if you, let's say you take a stone, tie it to the end of a string, and twirl it around your hand like David and Goliath, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the centrifugal force grabs a hold of that stone and creates an arc, correct?
Yep.
So if you want to hit something with that, well, all you got to do is take your body, walk it around until you get close to that object, and let gravity, centrifugal force, hit the object. You wouldn't try to manipulate that stone to hit that object, would you?
No.
Well, that's the problem with golf. Everybody is so preoccupied with trying to hit the golf ball that they never achieve a proper golf swing. And that is right there the fundamental of what we do. First thing we're going to show you how to whip the snot out of that golf club. okay? Mm-hmm. And then we're going to show you how to allow, when you whip that club, how to allow the sole of the club to skip or deflect off of the turf, off the ground turf, right? And towards a target. So let's say you're skipping a stone on water. You look at the pond, and you have a target at the other side of the pond, like a big oak tree. So you whip the stone, you give it a good whirl, and then the stone skips on water and then hits the tree on the other side of the pond. Well, that's exactly what golf is, what golf should be. You take the sole of the club, and then it's got an extension leading into your hands. And then when you use gravity and centrifugal force to whip that club, the club is now allowed to track on an arc. So all you want is to center that arc as best you can, which is basically you want to be braced against something solid. And everybody knows that you need to be braced against your left side, if you're a right-handed golfer, to create a proper center for that arc. So now if you've got a good center for that arc, then the sole of the club can now hit the ground at the same spot. And if you look at advertisements for stack and tilt, and they talk about how you want to hit the same spot on the ground, and that spot has to be slightly in front of the golf ball. So you need to have a consistent place where that club's going to skip the ground. Then you just put the ball slightly at the back of that skip mark, but then don't try to hit the golf ball. Swing the club again, let gravity take the club again, allow the club to skip the ground, and lo and behold, that ball will hit the center of the club face and go up into the air. We do it here all the time with our students. We have them skip the club and hit dimes off the mat. And they say, wow, I can hit a dime. Well, that's way smaller than a golf ball. Yeah. Then we put a golf ball on top of that dime, and we say, okay, there's no ball there. Can you still see the dime through that transparent golf ball? And then they'll whip the club again, clip the dime with the sole of the club, and off goes the golf ball in the air. And then they look at the golf ball, their jaw is hanging on the ground, and say, I hit that. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So then they go ahead and they hit a few more balls, and then all of a sudden they hit the ground before the ball. The first thing I ask them is, what was your focus? And they go, oh, I tried to hit the ball. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't have a specific focus in mind, like whipping the club toward the target, you automatically default to the ball. The ball becomes your target. And this is like before you learn how to walk, you learn how to grab things, right?
Sure.
I have this guy named Randy Kaysen really got me on the right track. He's in Crestview, Florida. Terrific teacher. Really an amazing mind.
Yeah, let's see if we can get him on the show.
Sure. Well, he's down in Crestview, Florida. I believe he's still at...
Well, we'll talk about that afterwards.
Sure. So anyways... you know, he talks about triangulation, right? So if, let's say, you have a coffee cup on the table, you go and grab the cup. You don't think about that, do you? So you grab your cell phone, you grab your coffee cup, you grab your keys. It's something that you don't really need to think about. Your eyes triangulate the object. The eyes tell the brain where to put the hand. Completely subconscious. And you do this thousands of times each day. Now, we handcuff your hands to a golf club. The club head now becomes your hands. If you don't have a specific focus as to what you want to do with that club, you will default and try to hit the golf ball. And that's where you hit the ground before the ball or top the ball and do all that stuff, because now you're throwing all your energy to the ground. You got nothing going to the target. Hmm. So you see where that reasoning comes from?
Sure, sure.
So
now give us the drill here on how, if you could instruct us on how to do that drill to work again with the dime. Let's walk through that.
Okay.
And so we can practice while we're commuting or listening.
Sure.
Or taking a walk.
Well,
we can stop
right
here.
The first video I ever put out, mm-hmm, is called Posture and Balance. A little 2-minute video shows you how to get your posture and how when you bend forward from the chest, something has to counterbalance you. So you need to protrude your posterior rearward. Mm-hmm. And for many golfers, it feels like that butt is in the next county behind them.
Yeah.
Okay? That's what you want. If you've got a nice full-length mirror, you look at yourself in the mirror and you'll see it's really not the case.
Well, because you feel if you just tilt your chest over, you're going to fall down. So you've got to counterbalance that, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So now when you counterbalance with the butt, what you need to feel is imagine the arches of your feet are like suction cups, and you're applying suction to the ground through those arches.
Mm-hmm.
So you apply knee flex to apply more pressure to the arches of the feet. If you bend the knees too much, you end up on your toes. If you don't bend the knees enough, the front of your feet will be floating off the ground. So once you've got yourself forward with the chest and secure to the ground through the arches, now you need, once you've got the grip and you have a basic arm motion, right? So you'll see one of my videos is called Arm Motion, and obviously I have one on the grip there. So you got your posture, you got a solid grip, and you got your arm motion. So now you start swinging the club back and through without stopping. I call it the perpetual motion drill. In that perpetual motion drill, when you're swinging back and through without stopping, I want you to be aware of the how gravity is grabbing a hold of the club in your arms. So you should feel it from the shoulder sockets down, all right, as you're swinging the club back and through. So then the forward tilt of the chest as you swing back and through should allow the sole of the club to start skipping off the ground in both directions. So you see, you know, you'll be able to look, if your eyes stay down there and your eyes are not following the club, you'll see a spot where that club is going to skip. So if the club can skip in the same place in both directions, back and through, well, that's where the ball should be, no?
Of course.
So then,
making it too easy, Sean.
You stop, you take a practice swing, you give the club another nice whip, and you'll see the club will still pass in that spot. Well, the ball better be there. So we set the club down on that spot, and we retake the full posture, and then all we got to do is take this machine and bring it to a golf ball. So you're going to waddle over and find the golf ball and put the ball right at the back of that spot, and that's basically center to slightly forward of center, okay? So then now, if you change the focus and try to hit the golf ball, well, gosh, that's completely different information coming out of that brain at different times, activating a different set of muscles than that of the one swinging that club, isn't it? You see what I mean?
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is audio, and I'm nodding.
Okay, good. So that's why, you know, one of the biggest things I hear is, how come I can't repeat my practice swing, Sean? You know?
Sure.
My buddies tell me I got this gorgeous practice swing. I hear this from women as much as men. And then I get to the ball, and I can't do it. I said, okay, when you're swinging when you're taking your practice swing, what's your focus? Well, I'm just swinging the club. I said, okay. You feel the weight of that club, and you feel that nice whip. All right, let's deepen that. Then I show them how to skip the club on the ground. So I said, okay, now you see where it skipped right here. I'm going to put a ball down. First thing they feel is they're too close to the ball.
Mm.
Because now they're actually in a position to swing through the golf ball. They're not getting ready at address to hit a golf ball. If you're getting ready to hit a golf ball at address, guaranteed that ball's going to be further away than it should be.
Mm.
You see? Because you're getting ready for the golf ball to become the target.
So people stand too far away from the ball.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now, you swing the club back and through, put a ball down where the club is passing, and then I say, okay, don't try to hit the ball. Remember the feel of that swing now? Do you remember what it felt like when you whipped the club and you let the sole of the club skip off the turf and we're skipping toward that red flag over there? Okay, let's see you do that again. And then their eyes are on the ball, but they can put the focus on anything they want, right?
Sure.
So it's like watching a teacher in your classroom, you know, when you're a kid, and your eyes are right on the teacher, but your mind is completely out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could be on that car project that you have or on your girlfriend or whatever. So you can have your eyes on the ball, but then make sure the focus is on whipping that club across that turf towards a target. That target is an intricate part of that golf swing. So now we got a repeatable swing and a repeatable focus. It's the focus that's very important to repeat. Now the ball is truly in the way of your golf swing. And that's what you'll see, you know, in most of my videos, and that's what you'll see the guys on tour. A really good routine to look at is Stephen Ames. You watch him take a practice swing, then you watch him go to the golf ball, his golf swing with the ball is a carbon copy of his practice swing.
And you don't see that very often.
You don't.
Hmm. Interesting. So then a lot of what you're talking about is overthinking your golf swing?
Oh, Gosh, yeah. What's very important, and the way we teach here, is we quickly move from the technical side. So when we explain something technically to a student, it's only for their understanding, so that they can move on and trust the motion, right? So we go quickly from a technical standpoint to an analogy, something that they've done in their life before, like skipping a stone or hammering a nail or twirling a stone around a string, you know? And once we have that analogy and we've had them swing the club through this analogy, at the end of the swing with the golf club, they'll either have the feel or they don't. And we'll keep working with them until they get, until we see the proper body language on our end, and until they feel the proper motion on their end. So then, once we have a feel, we lock into it, and we reinforce the feel. So then when they get on the golf course, it's no longer a question of, what did I do wrong? I just mishit the shot. What the heck did I do wrong? When you go there, you are lost. It's over. Okay? You are out of the box. It's going to take you 4 or 5 holes, and then you're going to say, enough with the thinking, and then you'll say, and then you'll hit a great shot. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't go and start thinking about what you did wrong or what you did right. A great book that I recommend to your audience is The Inner Game of Tennis by Timothy Galway. Now, he did write The Inner Game of Golf. I wouldn't go there. I would go to his original 1974 or 1975 transcript, the original transcript of The Inner Game of Tennis. And he's got some wonderful analogies there that are so easy to translate to golf. And one of them is to perform without any expectations or without any judgment. Don't judge whether or not it's good or bad. Especially at the beginning. If you hit a great shot and you go, what did I do to hit that great shot? Then you're lost again, because then you're thinking about your swing and you're trying to repeat a swing manually instead of going to the feel. So once we've reinforced that feel, they get out on the golf course, they miss a shot, they go, okay, it's okay. I know I'm supposed, once in a while I'm going to miss a shot, right? So what was that feel again? Oh, yeah. Then they take a couple of practice swings. They regain the sensation of what they were trying to do. They go back to the golf ball, and they go, okay, I'm going over there. What's the feel again? Oh, yeah. Here's the feel. Whew. And they whip the club through there. Off goes the golf ball. Beautiful shot. They're back on track in one swing, because all they're looking for is a feel. It's like riding a bike. You try to verbalize riding a bike, Fred.
Yeah, right.
It's impossible.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But you darn know what it feels like, right?
But why? I'm curious, why the inner game of tennis and not the inner game of golf?
Because Timothy Galway is from a tennis background. Fantastic tennis professional, fantastic tennis teacher. And when I read The Inner Game of Golf, it was so different. And he was trying to put himself in the golfer's mind. Well, sorry, man, because you have a lot of have a lot of weight as far as a tennis pro. But when you're trying, if you're 20 handicap, trying to tell a scratch handicap or a +2 what to do with a golf swing,
yeah,
it doesn't come out right.
But is tennis as mental a game as golf is?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? Because it's all reaction. It's fast moving reaction.
No. You can sabotage yourself so badly in tennis. You know, you're trying to improve your tennis stroke.
I see.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Well, you can overthink yourself to death in tennis too.
Interesting. Well, we're going to make The Inner Game of Tennis by Timothy Galway, we're going to make it available on our Smarter Shopping page. We have a number of books that are listed there.
Absolutely.
They're all golf related. But go to golfsmarter.com and click on Smarter Shopping and the golf related books. And there will be tucked inside there, we will have, by the time this interview gets published, we will have The Inner Game of Tennis listed.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
They'll really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's the best book I've ever read on the mental side of golf.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Well, we have a number of those too. So, but we do have our listeners who check these books out, and they appreciate the recommendations.
That's
on
awesome,
book.
Brett.
So, yeah. Well, no, Sean, you're awesome. You're a phenomenal communicator, and that is the just the essence of being a good teacher, being able to communicate what you're trying to get out there, not just showing people, but if you can communicate it on an audio podcast versus showing them on YouTube, then you're succeeding. And congratulations, my friend, you have succeeded. So we really appreciate it. Again, SeanClementGolf.com, and it's SeanClementGolf.com. Don't do S-E-A-N. And check out the YouTube videos. And Sean, we really hope that you will join us again on Golf Smarter.
Thanks very much, Fred. It'd be my pleasure. A lot of fun.
Now, let me remind you one more time, you can see just one of Sean's YouTube videos on the Golf Smarter blog. Now, it's been a while since we talked about it, but the Golf Smarter blog at golfsmarter.com is a great way to keep track of everything that's going on with all of our Golf Smarter podcasts, whether it's Golf Smarter, Golf Smarter Tips, or Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. You can search content, get information about our giveaways, check out and submit questions for upcoming interviews, and listen to any of the episodes that we've published since the beginning of the blog, and you can listen right on your computer. Now, the blog started about a year ago at the beginning, maybe at the end of 2007, and we've been publishing Golf Smarter podcasts since the beginning of 2006. So there's a lot that's not there, so you'll have to go through the catalog at golfsmarter.com to get everything, but the Golf Smarter blog has a full year of content that you can review. Of course, we prefer that you subscribe to all of our shows so that you don't miss a single one. We want to make sure that you enter to win the perfect putting machine. Dean Thompson, inventor, is giving away one to a Golf Smarter listener, and the winner will be announced on January 9th. Deadline for entry is January 2nd, 2009. Just go to golfsmarter.com and click on the contest tab, fill out your information and the verification code, and you are in. Now, while you're on that page, click on the Perfect Putting Machine banner at the top of the page to go directly to their homepage. The price of the Perfect Putting Machine has been lowered to only $269. Sounds like a lot, but it's far less than a new driver, and really, where do you want to save strokes? On the putting green or at the tee? Think about it. Now, they've also provided an exclusive offer to Golf Smarter listeners. Use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER and you'll receive a free carrying case with your order. Again, after you enter the drawing at golfsmarter.com, click on the Perfect Putting Machine link at the top of the contest page to get more about the Perfect Putting Machine. Thanks for your continued support. Little milestones are always fun, and this past week we crossed over the 1.5 million download threshold. That's 1.5 million downloads of the Golf Smarter podcast. They said it couldn't be done, and it has been. We close today's program with a great quote by Lee Trevino. He says, "You don't know what pressure is until you've played for $5 a hole with only two in your pocket." Next week, David Ledbetter's top teacher for PGA Tour professionals, Sean Hogan. If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
The Good Dog Podcast is for people who are passionate about dogs.
I love my dogs.
I interview veterinarians, dog behaviorists, and a whole range of experts who offer tips and insights.
A good German Shepherd makes decisions. It will say, well, you know, I know the light just changed, but on the other hand, there's a very quiet Prius coming your way, and so I'm going to stop, whereas labs have a tendency to just follow rules.
You'll hear about some amazing canines who help their owners to be safe, and in some cases, alive.
Sometimes diabetics will test and they'll still be at 100 saying, I'm not going low, what are you talking about? And the dogs let them know before they even feel it.
And you'll pick up ideas for solving a host of challenges.
Within a week, you're going to have a dog that is calm, he lies down quietly, he's just going to be a totally different dog.
I'm Joanne Green. Please subscribe to the Good Dog Podcast, found in iTunes or at smarterpodcasts.com.